Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome to the Seek Learning Podcast. I'm Dr. Casey Paul Griffiths, professor at Brigham Young University. You know, growing up, I was a decent student, but there was one subject I always struggled in, math. I'm not sure why, but my brain just wasn't wired to do well in this subject, and over the years, I really came to dread it. Not surprisingly, when it came time for my college entrance exams, I got top scores in reading, English, and science, but a dismally low score in math. So low that even though I made it into BYU, I had to take remedial math when I got here. But I was lucky that at BYU I had a really great math teacher who was patient, who worked with me, and helped me master the basics. Later, I actually took statistics during my doctoral program, where I had another very, very patient teacher who took the time to make sure that I understood everything. They showed me how math could help me understand the world, connect it to my everyday life, and they finally answered those, "When will I ever use this?" kind of questions that I always asked when I was in my younger years. Today, I can't say that I'm great at math still, but I am a little more competent than I used to be, and any competence that I have, I owe to good teachers who worked with me. Today on the podcast, we're talking to a really, really good math teacher, Keith Latham, who works in the math education department at BYU. Keith is a passionate teacher and likes to mentor future teachers. He's going to walk us through a few skills that will help students catch fire, not just in math, but in any of the subjects we teach. That's the focus on today's episode of Seek Learning.
In the lives of Latter-day Saints, education is central to their religion and its practice.
For members of the church, education is not merely a good idea, it's a commandment.
At the David O. McKay School of Education at Brigham Young University, scholars carry out different studies every year in the field of education. In this podcast, we speak to these scholars to find out what they discovered about education and what does it mean for Latter-day Saints. How can these findings be applied in home and gospel settings? Finally, what inspired them to become an educator and how has it affected their lives?
Education is the difference between wishing you could help other people and being able to help them.
This is the Seek Learning Podcast, presented by the BYU Education Society.
Our guest today, Dr. Keith Latham, works in the Department of Mathematics Education at Brigham Young University. Keith grew up in Rexburg, Idaho, where he attended Madison High School and then Ricks College, now known as BYU, Idaho. He spent 2 years in France and Belgium as a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Keith also received a B.S. in mathematics education from Utah State University, and after graduation, he taught mathematics at Timpview High School in Provo, Utah. He then returned to Utah State for a master's of mathematics. In the fall of 1997, he moved from Logan, Utah to Athens, Georgia, where he earned a Ph.D. in mathematics education from the Department of Mathematics Education at the University of Georgia. Go Dogs! Just prior to coming to BYU, Keith taught for 2 years in the Department of Mathematics and Statistics at Portland State University. Keith recently sat down with Lynette Christensen from the Seek Learning team, and let's join them in their conversation.
We're delighted to have Dr. Keith Latham here with us today. Dr. Latham is the department chair of math education in the College of the Physical and Mathematical Sciences here at BYU. And we're here to talk to him about his project, Building on Mosts.
It is a project funded by the National Science Foundation, and it's a collaborative project. Blake Peterson and I here at BYU have been working with colleagues at Michigan Tech University and also Western Michigan on this project.
And you started in 2012. Right?
Yes, we've been working on this for a long time.
All right. Well, tell us briefly about the project and how the collaboration came about.
Yeah, so I have to go a little ways back in order to,
sure.
to tell that story. Because really the collaboration was born in student teachers' classrooms and in our observations of student teachers as novice teachers. As a university supervisor, I'd go into their classroom. They would have shared with me their lesson, and I'd be looking over at the lesson as they were teaching. And students would say things, and I would think, that's exactly That's like perfect. That's exactly what you wanted them to say in this lesson. And it would just go right over their head and they just move on. And I think, but wait a minute, that's exactly what the lesson was all about. Why didn't you pounce on that? And so I started talking about that with Blake, and the two of us thought, you know, there's something to this. We need to look at what our student teachers are noticing in their classrooms. And in particular, what they're noticing about what students say during a lesson and how it relates to their goals, what they're trying to accomplish. And that started us down a road of trying to conceptualize these particular things that we wanted them to notice, these moments that we were noticing and they weren't. So basically, we started thinking about what a teachable moment is in a mathematics classroom discussion. And we started conceptualizing that and studying our student teachers. So what that looked like is that we initially, our first grant proposal basically said, we're going to figure out what these moments are, and we're going to study how teachers take advantage of them. And it was way too big. All the feedback was, this is a great idea, but you're promising to do way more than you could possibly do in one grant. So we ended up breaking things up, and our first grant was just about conceptualizing the moments themselves. What is a moment? How does one recognize it? What are the characteristics of moments in classrooms? And then the second grant, having done that, the second grant was, okay, now how do we make sense of the practice of taking advantage of those moments when they occur in a classroom? And so that's what we've spent the last 6 years studying. And we are in the process of applying for continued funding, because the next stage of the grant then, now that we've conceptualized the practice of building on most, taking advantage of these moments, now we want to study, okay, how do teachers learn this practice? Now, I should probably mention what a most is.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, we're building on mosts. It might be helpful to know what a most is. So most is just an acronym for a mathematical opportunity in student thinking, M-O-S-T. Mathematical opportunity in student thinking. The basic gist of that is that we're talking about things that students say, not things that teachers say. Things that students say in a classroom that both are mathematically significant, they're related to important mathematics, and they also are said in such a way that they create an opportunity, which means really that they're said in such a way that it sets up the class to make sense of what they've said. The obvious situation like this is when a student asks a really good question. Turning that question back over to the class is often an excellent learning opportunity for everybody. Or they might say something that's slightly incomplete, or they might say something that's incorrect, and you can position that as a conjecture in the class and let the class make sense of it and decide whether it's correct. So moments like that are prime opportunities to hold sense-making discussions in the classroom. And so we've conceptualized these moments, and we've learned a lot about how teachers take advantage of them. And now we want to know how to help teachers learn how to do that.
Well, talk to us about the critical elements of a most.
The first one is that it needs to be students thinking, not teachers thinking. So it comes from students. And this practice of building on most is very much a student-centered practice. You might characterize it as a way to productively use student mathematical thinking that comes out in a whole class discussion. So part of the practice of building on most is really making clear what it is students are claiming, which takes a little bit of work on the part of the teacher at times to help students articulate just what it is that they have in mind. Another characteristic of a most, though, is that it creates this opportunity. So it has to come out the way the student says it needs to, you know, not everything that students say in a classroom are discussion worthy. It's not like everything they say, you just say, all right, class, what do you think about that? You have to be selective. And that means that it needs to give rise to kind of an intellectual need, a need to make sense of something, a need to prove, a need to understand. So examples of this would happen, for example, in a classroom. You know this as a teacher. Someone will say something and you can see that there are students in the class who are on board with what they say, and there are other students in the class who clearly disagree with what they say. So student statements that would give rise to debate, that's a good example of a teachable moment that we're describing. So characteristics are student thinking. They create this opportunity. And also, they need to be mathematical in nature. The point here is that having a discussion about it would help the students come to better understand some mathematics that's relevant to them, kind of where they are in their current learning.
You've spent, it looks like you've spent your career studying the complexities of teaching and learning math. And this is no easy task, right? I mean, what you're describing is fairly complex and takes some skill and some time.
It is absolutely complex. In fact, we learned early on that these moments occur in almost any classroom setting. It doesn't matter the nature of the lesson. It doesn't matter whether the teacher is quite teacher-centered or student-centered. These moments occur. If you give students a chance to speak, students will say things that are really worth making sense of, and they're worth the class taking up. Now, if you're in a classroom that's more teacher-centered than student-centered, the teacher is way less likely to take them up. But at least they occur. But what we learned is that regardless of the classroom, teachers actually taking full advantage of these moments is rare. Really, really good teachers still miss these. It's not on their radar. And so we wanted to study the practice of taking advantage of these moments. And it turns out we didn't know where to turn. Like how we were going to study them if the data didn't exist. We had to create the data. So we recruited teacher researchers to help us, and we taught them our conceptualization of what these moments were, and we talked about how they could take advantage of them. And then we worked with them. We created these little mini tasks that they could do in their classroom that we had piloted them, and we knew that they gave rise to differing opinions, different answers, debatable answers. So we could create a moment. We could set up the students and the teacher could elicit a thought, and instantly we would have a debate going in the classroom. So we used those little tasks that we created to create the same moment in multiple teachers' classrooms. And that way we could study what the teachers did with that moment, and we had some consistency across situations. It was the same mathematics. There were similar ideas that came out from the students in each of these classes. So then we could work with the teachers to unpack, okay, how do you take advantage of these? And we started out just trying. We had a basic idea that you might need to clarify what they said and then toss it to the class a good way and somehow, you know, knead together the ideas, and eventually you'd have made sense of something. But it took a lot of lessons and a lot of time analyzing these lessons to try to unpack the details of the practice of just what it takes to take advantage of them. So I'm so grateful for these teachers. They opened up their practice to us, and we studied their teaching for years in order to come up with this practice.
Well, this just speaks to the importance of, we all know good teacher preparation is really important. And this speaks to the importance of sending out people skilled in some of these important practices right into the field. Because, you know, a lot of us don't have great feelings about math and our confidence about it because of how we were taught. And so, yeah, it just seems like this is a critical piece that could apply to probably any subject area, content area. That's just another great tool for a teacher to be a great instructor and help students learn.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've learned a lot in this project. We've learned that it's interesting. It has serious implications for teacher preparation, definitely, because there are things we're now doing in our program that we weren't doing before because of this. So for example, we didn't used to talk about creating a public record of student thinking up on the board about the nuances of creating a good public record up there. And we realized that it's critical. If you're going to have the class come together and make sense of what a student has said, it's really abstract if you don't get some of the ideas up on the board so that students can keep hold on to it in order to construct kind of this joint argument that they're doing in sense making. And so we realized that using the board was critical, and that we never talked about it with our pre-service teachers. So now we have conversations about that board work at multiple places in our program, and students have been so grateful. They've said it made such a difference for them when they got into student teaching. That's just one example of how it's impacted our pre-service program. But the other thing is, this is a complex practice, and that means that it's something that every teacher can work on. So practiced, experienced teachers, this is still something that they can get excited about and that they can hone their craft with. So we found that both novices and experienced teachers love thinking about this practice.
If somebody's an experienced teacher and very interested in what you're talking about today, where would we send them to find out?
Well, they should definitely Google Building on Mosts, and it'll take them to our website that has links to many of our papers and presentations on these ideas, and also has our contact information so they could reach out if they were interested in working with us or in getting materials. Sometimes people just want those mini tasks that we came up with because it turns out they were really good questions that could quickly spark great classroom discussions.
Good, good. Any plans to share this with other content areas? A way to share the great things you guys have been learning?
We don't really have plans to do much with that ourselves. We're trying to put it out there and trying to share the idea that certainly most are mathematical opportunities in student thinking, but you could just replace mathematical with almost any content area. And in any discipline, I'm sure those of you who are listening you've noticed these moments too in classrooms with respect to your content area. You've noticed that students say particular things and you think, yes, that's exactly what I was hoping they would say. And that will spark a great discussion in my classroom.
Well, Keith, your department prepares secondary math education students. Do these same principles apply to elementary mathematics instruction? And are you doing anything with those who are going to teach math in elementary school?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We have some evidence that it works well in elementary. The teachers that worked with us on our project were from both middle and junior and high schools. So we do have a bunch of data from sixth grade, for example. And that seemed to work. The practice seemed to work the same there as it did in 12th grade. we know that, for example, that the nature of classroom discussions in classes with very young kids is different. But we do, so I think it would be very interesting to study this practice with teachers of first and second grade, for example. One of the things that we've come across, though, is it doesn't matter what age students are. Students are quite capable of sharing ideas that aren't related to the topic at hand. So one of the things we've learned is that if you're going to build on a moment, you have to try to keep, we call it a conversational bubble. You have to create a conversational bubble around that thinking, and you have to help corral students' thinking so that they stay focused on making sense of that, and they don't just kind of popcorn all over the place and share whatever thing they find slightly related. Teachers need to help keep things focused. And I think that this idea of creating and maintaining a conversational bubble would be particularly valuable for teachers of young children, who I know develop strategies around that, but it's a real challenge. And you're always counterbalancing the desire to let people participate with the desire to have that participation be more meaningful or more helpful to everybody.
While Keith has given us a good overview of some of his techniques, during the second part of our conversation, we want to talk about how to apply these. Keith is going to introduce us to a few resources available for teachers, parents, or anyone else who wants to use them. Let's rejoin him and Lynette in their conversation.
Well, tell us why these concepts around MOST and these teaching skills are so important to instruction, especially in math, and what the benefits are to student understanding.
Yes. So the reason teachable moments are so important in a classroom, first of all, comes from the fact that we think classroom discourse is critical to student learning, that students learn from engaging in conversation about content, in trying out ideas, and in listening to their peers. And so this is grounded in a kind of a theory of learning that it's social and that students are learning from each other. It's why we advocate for classroom discussions and not just lectures. So it's grounded in that as a premise. Classroom discussions are valuable to learning. But then it digs deeper and says, but how do you make them productive? Just talking isn't going to do it. That talking needs to lead somewhere. And so if a teacher can recognize an opportunity to create a productive whole class discussion, one that leads the class to better understand a piece of mathematics, then that class discussion is directly accomplishing some of their learning goals. So really, this idea of taking advantage of moments is the idea of making whole class discussions the most productive they can be.
Well, it just seems like so much more engaging for students, especially in a math classroom where you have to model so many concepts.
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the principles that kind of underlies this, our view of taking advantage of these moments, is the idea that the moves that a teacher does, they need to honor students' thinking. They need to position students as legitimate mathematical thinkers. And in order to do that, it means that if you're going to take up a student's idea, you need to really take it up. Don't just pretend to take it up. If you're going to ask the class to make sense of somebody's contribution that they've given, then you need to carry that out. Stay focused. Do that thing. And not just kind of pretend to do it. And sometimes we've seen that in classrooms where teachers are kind of pretending to use student thinking. But they're really just kind of cherry picking in order to say what they would have said anyway. But really, productive use of student thinking really honors students and says, no, they're legitimate mathematical thinkers. They have something to contribute. They can make sense of things if you give them the opportunity to. And that's a critical principle for us.
All right, Keith, if you had to give us several takeaways from this work, what would your takeaways be?
Well, one takeaway is that teaching is a complex practice. There's a lot of art to it, but there's also a lot of skill. And the art of teaching is going to be much improved if you can improve the skills of teaching to go with it. And so this project has taught us that there are some particular skills that would be really important for teachers to learn if they want to have productive classroom discussions. Some of these skills related to really attending to students' thinking, tracking their ideas, helping developing a practice. Many of you may not have thought of this, but there's a teacher move that we call offer that isn't often talked about in the literature. And that's this idea that when a student says something in the class, teachers typically respond to what the student says. In other words, they take it on themselves and answer. And we'd like to see more, particularly in these moments, when they offer that thinking back to the class. So when a student says something, they might say, "That's a really great question, class. What do you think?" That offering of student thinking back to students, I think, needs to become more of a go-to move for teachers.
The mission of the McKay School states, "We strive to model the attributes of Jesus Christ, the master teacher, as we prepare professionals who educate with an eternal perspective." It seems that recognizing and capitalizing on teaching moments is a way of emulating the teaching style of the master teacher. Tell us about the gospel applications of what we're talking about.
You know, if you think about the parables in the New Testament, or almost any teaching of the Savior in the New Testament, they basically came out of just everyday situations and moments, opportunities where something would happen, and then Jesus would draw the disciples aside and make a comment, or he would just turn and teach something related to these situations. He seemed to view every interaction as a potential opportunity to teach. Now, of course, we have those special moments when he took advantage of those. I'm sure there are many times when he wasn't teaching a parable, but we have recorded these moments when it was opportune and he took advantage of them and he taught eternal principles. So yes, I think this is definitely a gospel principle with respect to teaching. The other thing is, given the come follow me curriculum that we use in the church right now, and the real desire in the curriculum materials in the church for discussion-based instruction in church, I really think that this principle of taking advantage of teachable moments applies to gospel learning as well. And so if you can imagine yourself in a class of 16 and 17-year-olds, and you've asked, they're having a discussion about something, and someone asks a question about the gospel. The discussion has given rise to a question. It would be great if, as gospel teachers, we could pause for just a second and say, I realize that this is a chance for me to show how much I know about the gospel, but it's also a chance to let these students show what they know about the gospel. So instead of me pontificating right now and sharing an experience from my mission, how about if I say, what do you all think? And I let the students take up their ideas. Now, I'm not saying that you as the teacher would never share your ideas either, but if we could have a go-to move of turning these statements, these wonderful statements that students make, turning it back to the class, we could have really rich discussions that I think are exactly what the leaders are envisioning our gospel discussions to be.
It seems like part of what you're saying here is we need to give ourselves permission to take the time and let it go the direction that it needs to go.
Yes, I think that it is past time for us to believe when our curriculum materials say that you do not have to cover everything in a given lesson, that is never the intention of these lessons. It is fodder for discussion. And if we as teachers could just own that and just accept that we're going to prepare way more for our lessons than we're ever going to share or use, but that all that preparation is just making it so that when a particular discussion or two happen, we're ready to help the class discuss those things, all that preparation's worth it.
Yeah, that's where the Spirit can speak individually to hearts. It's the setting the environment for that to happen.
Yeah, I'm not sure that how many times the Spirit has spoken in the part of a lesson where a teacher's trying to make sure they cover everything. I think the Spirit tends to speak when the teachers are being receptive to the thoughts that students in the class are having, and try to allow space for the class to take up those ideas and really make something of them.
During the final part of our conversation with Keith Latham, we always want to get a little personal. We want to know his story. Keith's original ambition was quite different than being a mathematics teacher, but the Lord led him down some surprising paths. He also talks a little bit about how the math education program at BYU is unique. Let's rejoin Keith and Lynette.
Well, let's talk for a few minutes about your faith journey. Anything you want to talk about? I know you're a member of the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square and have been for a few years. If you know, you share a little bit about that with us.
Yes, absolutely. I will say that everybody has a, if they're here at BYU as a professor, they have a story about how they arrived here. And I certainly have one. The short version is that I was offered a job at BYU and at another institution right out of graduate school. And the answer to prayer was to say no to BYU and go to the other school. And I did that. And within 6 months, I was set up on a blind date with my now wife. And once we were engaged, I called up BYU and I said, any chance you've got another job opening? And they said, we didn't fill the one you applied for before. And so I applied again and I got the job and I've been here for 20 years. But the Lord wanted me to come here, but wanted me to go to Portland, Oregon first to find my wife. So I'm forever grateful that I listened to that prompting because that's made all the difference for me and my little family.
Lots of times our promptings don't make sense at the time, right?
That's for sure. As far as music goes, that's always been a love and a passion of mine. And finally, a few years back, our children were old enough that my wife and I decided that it was okay for me to audition for the Tabernacle Choir. And so that experience has been amazing. I was lucky or unlucky enough to be in the 2020 cohort in the Tabernacle Choir, meaning that I got in and I was supposed to perform for the first time ever with the Tabernacle Choir in April 2020 conference when they shut everything down and had no live performing. And then everything was shut down for a year and a half. So I didn't want to tell people that I'd made it in the choir until they could actually see me performing. So I hadn't told people that I was in the choir. And then everything got shut down and I had to wait for a year and a half until finally we started performing in the fall of 2021 to actually tell people, hey, I've been in the choir for a while, but we haven't done anything. Anyway, it's an amazing experience to sing in that choir.
All right. So tell us about your educational background and why you sought further education.
When I was a high school student, I loved math. And I also loved music, and I loved to learn. But I figured that I would do something in math. I had no idea what. I went to then Ricks College, now BYU-Idaho, and I took math classes and music classes, and then I went on my mission. And while I was on my mission, I realized that I really enjoyed teaching people, teaching the gospel. I thought, as many missionaries do, maybe I would teach seminary. I love teaching the gospel. Maybe I could make that my job. I got back, though, and as I studied more, both at Ricks and then at Utah State, I realized that my real passion was in mathematics. I really loved thinking about how other people thought about math, trying to figure out what was going on in their head, what made them think that way, and how could I help them to advance their understanding of particular mathematical ideas. And that was really my passion. So I majored in mathematics education. I graduated from Utah State, and I taught high school at Timpview High School for 3 years. And while I was there, I still had this passion for thinking about how kids were thinking about math. And it turns out that most my colleagues didn't really want to talk about that. So I thought, well, there's got to be a way I can have those conversations. I'll go back to school. And so after 3 years, I went back to Utah State for a master's degree in math education. And while I was doing that, I got a chance to teach college students. And I thought, oh, I like teaching these guys too. I loved teaching high school kids, but I also liked teaching college kids. And then it dawned on me that there are people who are working at universities teaching future teachers. And they get to, this is what just blew my mind, they'd actually get paid to do research. So they get paid to learn. And that's what I wanted to do, is not leave school. I just wanted to be a student forever. And I thought, oh, well, that's really what a professor is. A professor is just a full, like a lifelong student They just happen to get, they get to choose what they're going to study, and then they get paid to study it and share what they learned with others. And so that sent me to the University of Georgia to do a PhD in math education and launched me on this career of being a professor of mathematics education.
Tell us why you think education is so important.
To me, education is another way of saying plan of salvation, the plan, the good news. The good news of the plan of salvation is Jesus Christ. But the plan itself is one of learning. It's just it's eternal progression. It's the idea of learning. So education, where we focus on, I'll put it this way. Education is then critical to the plan. And we definitely know from apostles and prophets the value that they see in education. They see it, they often will talk about education in terms of getting a broad education to prepare people to be useful in the world and to be productive in the world. But there's a deeper meaning of education, and that is that it's about us individually becoming the best that we can be. And that means that we're all lifelong learners. So being involved in education feels like you're just involved in God's work.
Keith, your passion for teaching and education is evident just listening to you. I wish the listeners could see your face. How lit up, and he's been smiling almost the whole time he's been talking. Is there anything that we've missed that you would really want to share with others?
One of the things that's great about being a mathematics educator at BYU is that BYU is unique in the United States. We're the only university that has a Department of Mathematics Education. And what that means is that we have a department that is solely focused on doing research on mathematics teaching and learning and preparing future mathematics teachers. And that oneness of purpose in our department is a real blessing. It's one of the reasons I love being here. And in fact, it's one of the reasons I wanted to come to BYU in the first place, this because of the existence of this department. So because of that, we have been able to put together a world-class math education program for future middle and high school mathematics teachers. And anytime I get a chance, I want people to know about that amazing program that we have. Our mission, really, our goal is that every BYU student who thinks they might want to be a mathematics teacher has a chance to figure that out, that they have an opportunity to decide if that's something they want to do. Not everybody should be a math teacher, but everybody who loves math and who loves kids ought to at least consider it and find out if it's the right thing for them.
Good. Well, it's been delightful to visit with you. We're happy to have had you on the podcast. Thank you and wish you well in your work.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Our thanks to Keith Latham and Lynette Christensen for their time today. The Seek Learning Podcast is produced by the BYU Education Society in cooperation with the McKay School of Education. I'm Casey Paul Griffiths, and I serve along with Michael Leonard as the executive producers of the podcast. We also receive assistance from Lynette Christensen, David Bourne, and Betsy Ecton. Editing and production for this episode is carried out by our wonderful students of the McKay School, with our theme and music composed by Alistair Schwerman. Thank you for listening. And if you like what you've heard, you can help us grow the podcast by subscribing or writing a review wherever you receive your podcasts. Or look up the Society and give us a like or a comment on Facebook, Instagram, or your favorite social media feed. You might have noticed that we've changed our name to the BYU Education Society. The Society holds an annual conference every June, usually the third week of June, to provide inspiration and information for those of you out there in the field. We hope you'll join us this June, and you can find more information on our webpage. Just Google Seek Learning Podcast. Until next time, this is Casey Griffiths, and this has been Seek Learning.